It's funny, I'm not ever really nervous in front of you guys, as you probably can figure out. But right now is pretty terrifying. I can joke around with you guys, but when it comes to being serious, I'm not so great at that. But I trust that the Lord will work and give me the words to speak. One thing I did want to mention before I start here is that you guys are all getting into high school, that age, and when you get into high school is when you start having to think about college. I had talked to a couple of my professors about speaking, what I'd be speaking about, and they also said that I had to mention Maranatha. So I'll just say that there are other schools. There's that one up in Iowa, I guess down from Wisconsin in Iowa. There's other Bible colleges, but Bible college is a really great thing. They have other majors other than, you know, Bible majors. You can go in for nursing or music and at different education stuff. So not only are you getting a good education towards some, you know, some vocation that you might be in, but you can also get a good biblical core, which is foundational for what you believe, to be able to really know what you believe and be able to tell people, I believe this because of this. It's amazing, and it's really awesome to see God work through His Word. So enough of that. I want to speak to you today from 1 Corinthians. We'll be in chapter 10. I'm going to begin by just, as we heard earlier, 1 Corinthians, the author of 1 Corinthians is Paul. Obviously, he was writing it to the Corinthians. Paul started the church in Corinth and his second missionary journey. And he was writing to the Corinthians here. One, they had written him and asked him some questions. But the city of Corinth was, as it seems like most biblical cities, were not great cities for the Christian to be living in. Very hard. But he was writing them to encourage them. He was writing to them because he was somewhat concerned about their tolerance towards immorality and then different influences of the culture of that city. And then again, to answer some questions that they had. In chapter 10, Paul writes here, he starts off speaking about the Israelites as they're going through the wilderness there. And he's kind of reminding the Corinthians here about what they went through and some of the troubles that they had. I mean, then down in chapter 13 is the verse that I want to focus on today. It says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." This has been a great verse for me. And we all go through temptations and different things, trials in our lives. How many of you have brothers and sisters? How many have ever had the urge to hit your brother or sister? I won't say how many of you have actually carried through on that urge. how many of you, and when you're in school, you know, with your friends, and maybe they're bad jokes or something like that, you know, they've been tempted to share a joke. We go through temptations everywhere, and everyone goes through the temptations. In the beginning of verse 13 here, it speaks of, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man." What that's saying here, this is the plight of man, is that we all have these temptations. They're not specific just to us. No one person has a temptation that no one else has suffered through before. In 1 John here, chapter 2, you don't have to turn there. I'll turn there really quickly. If my fingers will start working here. In chapter 2, verses 15 and 16, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, And the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. These are all temptations. It's not too specific here, but it's specific enough. The lust of the flesh, anything that our flesh wants that's not of God. The lust of the eyes, if you're looking after something that you want, that you shouldn't be looking at. And then also the pride of life, as Pastor Colin mentioned, was pride of life, thinking, you know, I'm better than others. I, you know, I'm all of that. I'm in a bag of chips, as he said there. These are things that we struggle with. Temptations to be prideful, temptations to follow after the world, follow after our fleshly lusts and whatnot. And then in James chapter 1, or, yes, 1 here. Again, my fingers. You have to apologize. I'll have to apologize to you. You'll have to forgive me. The fingers don't work when you get nervous. But verses 14 and 15 are the ones I want to read. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when the lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. As we know in the Genesis account here, bringing me into my next point actually, our lust of the flesh, when we see something and we allow our flesh to take over, we fall into sin. That's when we fall into sin. We can see in Genesis chapter 3 when Eve and the serpent were in the garden, one thing that happens is Satan, he comes to us and he lies to us and he gets us to think about things, these things, and he convinces us that they are good for us when they are not. Now when the serpent was more subtle than any beast in the field which the Lord God hath made, and he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden. And then down in verse 4, and the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. What is the tactic here that Satan uses on Eve? When he persuades her? He puts doubt into her mind. Do you have some? Right, right. So earlier we see that God has given the Garden of Eden to Adam and Eve and says you can eat of every tree except this one tree. And Satan comes into Eve and puts doubt in her mind. Hath God said? She starts to question, well, what exactly did God say? Ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden. And then he goes off of that later on and he lies to her. He straight up just lies to her. And gets her to believe something else. And she sees this fruit and then she eats thereof. So the plight of man is the lure of the world. We see these things in the world that draw us. We're just naturally drawn to them. And then Satan sees that. And he uses that against us and lies to us and tells us that these things will be good for us. When they're not. They're of the world. They're not of God. But one thing that we have back in 1 Corinthians is the second part of that verse. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able. I think this is the important part right here in this verse. God is faithful. So many times in the Bible we see this, that God is faithful. God never has given up on the Israelites as they're going through the wilderness, and so many times that they fall, he doesn't give up on them. He brings them back to him constantly. He will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able. That suffer, the word suffer there, my note here. Also, in another place in Hebrews is the word succor or succor, and help and give assistance. In the time of need, he will not cause you to be tempted. but he will, with that temptation, excuse me, he will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able. We as men are weak, men and women, we are weak of the flesh. And where do we get our strength from? When we try to do things, we don't do this of our own accord. In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 18 says, "For in that he himself hath suffered, being tempted, he was able to succor them that are tempted." Excuse me, that's where the succor comes from. Being able to help them out in time of need. We think of Christ being tempted in the desert there when Satan came to him and tempted him three times. Christ was able to withstand those temptations from the devil. But another point of that is that Christ was tempted just as we are tempted. So we have a sympathetic person on our side. He knows what we went through. So he will be able to help us in our trials. And so through that, it's not our strength, but Christ's strength that we must rely on to resist these temptations here. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, another one of my favorite verses here. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, 9 and 10. "And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities than that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." What Paul is saying here in this 2 Corinthians is that he's saying, as Pastor Colin mentioned, he was saying, "I'm weak. I can't do these things on my own accord. But my reliance on Christ helps me through this. Christ will give me the strength to do it. I can't do it on my own." You all know the verse in Philippians chapter 4. "I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me." We have to completely rely on God to be able to get through our temptations. When we see these temptations coming on, we should, if we immediately realize it and turn to Christ for the strength to find a way to escape that. Then in the final part of the verse there, "But will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." God provides a path of escape for us. When we go into prayer, when we go to prayer to God, we can go before Him, and He will bring our prayer requests to God, and God will listen because He is our intercessor for God. Since He was the one to die on the cross for our sins, He is our intercessor. We can go to Him in prayer for the sins we may have committed, and also for the help that we need. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, "Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God." That's telling us, go to God in prayer. He is there to listen, and He will always be there. I know a lot of times it seems that we may not get an answer right away. As we see in chapter 11 of Daniel, when he prays and doesn't see an answer right away, we see later that the angel says to him when he does come, he says, "God sent me right away when he heard your prayer." Certain other things interfered. Satan's and his dominion interfered with that angel in coming to answer that prayer. But right away, God sent an answer to that. So we can rest in the fact that God does hear us right away, and He will answer us in His time, and we must rest on that as well, that He will answer us in His own time and not ours, and sometimes it may not be the answer that we want. I still haven't gotten my new motorcycle yet, but I guess I should stop praying about that. get some, maybe something else. And another thing I wanted to point out is back in Psalms, in chapter 61 here. Many points in the Psalms point to this. I just want to read the whole chapter here. Hear my cry, O God, attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For thou hast been a shelter for me, and a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings, Selah. For thou, O God, hast heard my vows. Thou hast given me the heritage of those that fear my name. Thou wilt prolong the king's life and his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. O prepare mercy and truth, which may preserve him. So will I sing praise unto thy name forever, that I may daily perform my vows. The Psalm of David here, and he comes to God, and obviously we can see that he's in some sort of stress. But it says in the third verse here, thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. We built those snow forts out there yesterday, and those were pretty good looking forts. At least ours was. I didn't see the other group's fort there, but those were pretty weak forts. When Ryan and a few other people came through and tore them down, the shelter that we have and the strong tower that we have are God, and He is the strong tower. Nothing will be able to topple Him. We can go to God, and we can find shelter in Him. Then I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings. This is really a zoomorphism. If you go to college, you'll learn this. A zoomorphism is when the psalmist here, he compares God to something of an animal. As we see, in the covert of thy wings, you have to think of when you see a mother duck or a goose or something swimming around in the water, where if the ducklings or goslings aren't floating along behind them, a lot of times they might be up on her back, and they're close to her. And then when they sleep, she'll actually wrap her wing around them. And that's what God can do for us. He will bring us in close to Him, close to Him, that we may be protected by Him, be safe, safe next to Him. So, when we go through these temptations, we can take solace in the fact that other people have gone through the same things that we have. No one's died, and these temptations aren't going to kill you. But that we can turn to God and go to Him. He will be faithful, and He will not allow us to be tempted above that ye are able. God will hold back the temptations that we wouldn't be able to resist. And a lot of times it seems like I can't resist this thing. It keeps coming. But He's faithful, and He doesn't allow us to be tempted past that we are able to resist, to experience. And then with that temptation, He also makes a way to escape for us. Another thing that here is, though, a lot of times we hear of people that we know that aren't saved. When they go through times of trials, they pray, which is good, but can you really expect God to hear your prayer when you're not doing anything for Him? When you're not, when times are good, He's not even in your mind. We have to be constantly thinking of God and trying to do His will. We want to be doing His will, and words are escaping me that I was thinking of. But we need to be in His Word daily, studying His Word, doing what He has for us to do, that we might also be able to come before Him, and that He will hear us. And that's all I have. It's very short, I realize, and I hope that it's been an encouragement to you all, and that you may think about that, and that throughout from here to maybe next camp season, that you will constantly be in communion with God, and that you will be letting Him guide your life so that you can resist the temptations that may fall you.